Welcome to What is Going Om's Conversations with Money Show, where you get to learn the secrets of how love and money are interlinked in ways you never imagined, and transform your relationship with money for good. Here are your hosts, Sandy Sedgbeer and Sarah McCrum.
Hello, and welcome to part three of Conversations with Money, co-hosted by me, Sandy Sedgbeer, and energy coach and consciousness of money expert, Sarah McCrum. Last month, we talked about two much misunderstood concepts that are inextricably linked with money, value and worth. Today, given the extraordinary global crisis we're now experiencing, we're going to be exploring the power of two more words, attention and intention. Sarah, you've been helping entrepreneurs, conscious business owners and game changers master their personal energy for 20 years. And you're the author of Love Money, Money Loves You, which provides much of the inspiration for your popular Consciousness of Money programs and courses. You've been talking to money for years, unlike the rest of us who've just been thinking and stressing about it for most of our lives. You put out a blog post a few weeks back around the subject of attention. So tell me what attention has to do with money.
Attention has to do with just about everything, actually, because where we pay our attention is really powerful. When we pay attention to something, we put energy into it, and we can see this really easily in the current situation. If we pay attention to the news, we can get almost overwhelmed by the information that is contained within the news, and it changes our mood. I have people who say, oh, I'm going to pay attention to relaxing, or I'm going to pay attention to feeling good, and it changes their mood. Now, the same thing is true with money. If you pay attention, for example, to receiving money, you will find ways to receive money. If you don't, because you say, I'm not interested in money, money's not important for me, it's not really surprising that you're not putting any energy into money, and at an energetic level, you don't receive the energy of money, and at a tangible level, it's actually therefore much harder to make money.
Now, I mean, in physics, there is a phenomenon known as the observer effect, which is what you say. You know, when we pay attention to something, it actually changes. I imagine it's going to change according to the frequency of the attention itself. So if it's fearful, if it's anxious, then it is going to change possibly in a less positive manner than if we're hopeful or positive.
Yes, actually what I found in my own kind of testing, because when I read about that thing about the observer effect, I started to experiment with it. And what I discovered is that if we pay attention to something, so if we observe something without emotion around it, it always evolves. That means it always gets better. So if we notice something that's not working well, but we don't get all fraught about it, we don't get upset about it, we just say, that's not working very well in my life, it immediately starts to improve. If we notice something that's really good, we say, that's working really well, but we don't get excited, we don't put a charge around it, it also continues to improve. The thing is that what we usually do when we observe something is we bring emotion to it. So we say, that's not working very well. I'm not making very much money. What's wrong with me? I'm a loser. I'm really stupid. I can never make money. And we spin ourselves into a spiral. And that actually changes the whole experience, because then instead of allowing consciousness itself to work, which is what happens with that observer effect, we start to control what's happening through our emotions. We fix a negative emotion around what we've observed, and we actually prevent it from evolving. So it's incredibly powerful to understand that you can be honest with yourself. You can see honestly what's going on, and it will improve automatically that's what really happens with that observer effect. You allow evolution to take place, but if you come to something very emotionally, you literally, through your emotions, create the kind of experience that you're going to have.
Well, what happens then when everybody, as they are right now, are putting their attention, and it's probably more likely to be fear-filled attention on something like money, and you're trying to do your darndest to put some positive attention on it?
Probably the answer to that question depends who you're asking about. First of all, when everyone is paying attention to lack of money, fear around money, it's interesting that we think that we're doing that because the economy is crashing, but we're also contributing to the crashing of the economy. And because if you think about it, we all still have the money. So some people are not earning the money they were before, but a lot of that is because a lot of us are not spending the money. And we could, more of us could circulate more money than we are simply by not being afraid. At the same time, for people like me who work in this field, it's like the field is much denser. When there's so much fear and it's so focused in one direction, then I think those of us who are really determined to feel and kind of anchor the new energy, because what's happening really is that there's a really powerful new energy coming in. And we're experiencing the releasing of the old energy, which is all the fear, the discomfort, the worry, the disease as well. It's all a releasing of old energy for this very powerful new energy to come in. People like me spend a lot of time working with the new energy so that people can feel it more. Because when you feel that new energy, you immediately feel peace. People who I'm working with, they all say, I'm not worried about money, even though I've lost a lot of income over the last few weeks. I'm not worried about it. They feel peace, and that creates a condition where they can find solutions.
This is a really interesting place to get people to. I mean, certainly I can't find a place within me. I look every now and then, scan my body, cannot find a place within me to be fearful about it. And you know, I observe that and think, well, that's very interesting, and you know, long may it continue, because fear is not productive. But you know, you pointed out something in a blog recently about the amount of attention, as you just said, you nailed it then, that the media is putting on everything, and that is actually almost kind of exponentially increasing the negative effect. When if the media wasn't placing so much attention on it, you know, we wouldn't be increasing our own anxiety.
And I think it's not only anxiety. You know, I trained for 22 years with Chinese masters, and the two masters who I trained with, they taught what they call energy transmission. And energy transmission happens basically at a very simple level when we're talking. So if I would start to talk about something very frightening now, everybody who listens to it would start to feel afraid. And if I talk about something really beautiful or sweet, we start to relax and feel the beauty or sweetness. But what's much more powerful than that, and what I've been working with for 30 years now, 31 years in fact, since I met my first Chinese master, is that by talking, I can help you to heal. Over the internet, I help people to heal, or heal money situations, or my past has been healing physical situations just by talking. Now, that is a tangible change that happens because of a certain way of talking. If the talking is a certain other way, which is actually about talking about sickness all the time, you are literally, physically creating more sickness. And, you know, the healing effect has been studied widely and scientifically. We know that distance healing works. We also know, interestingly, that distant prayer works. You know, it doesn't matter what you believe in. The science is there, and it's proven that it has a tangible effect on people's health outcomes. So doing the opposite of healing or prayer must, and I know that it does from experience, have a tangible effect on people's health outcomes. So I'm not just talking about how we feel, I'm talking about our physical response.
I agree. I would like you to tell our listeners a little bit of the story that you put into that blog post about the news, especially the part about, you know, when everything began to turn around with the rain. Would you just share that story with us? Because that in itself is a transmission.
Yes. Actually, I'll go back a little bit. What I started to notice last year, as the media started to pay more and more attention to climate change and climate disruption, it suddenly became a thing. Whereas before, sometimes the media were, they were a bit kind of iffy about it. Last year, I noticed that every single day, if I looked at the news on Google, there were several articles where basically we were being told more or less that the end of the world was coming because of climate change. And there came a point, and I remember feeling it in the energy field, where the media was beginning to contribute to the disruption of the climate. And again, I know that this is possible. We literally, by the power of our attention, change our physical reality. So that was my first observation. And then over Christmas, when the bushfires were happening in Australia, and perhaps because it's a quiet time of the year for news, the world's attention was on Australia. And we saw headlines like Australia is on fire, which actually there were very serious fires, but it was a, you know, very misleading. I was getting emails from people all over the world saying, are you all right? And we were having rain at the time. So, but the point is that everybody was looking at the same story, which was extraordinary. And there was at one point a request put out through social media for a global meditation, which was huge. And at the time, in the next couple of days, nothing much happened. And everyone said, or lots of people, commentators and observers said, oh, well, that was a failure. And there were a few drops of rain here or there. And so the meditators said that was a success, but the fires carried on. Within about 2 weeks, it started to rain and rain and rain. And honestly, I have never, still today it's raining. For 2 months now, we have had almost constant rain. The fires went out reasonably soon after that. But what was interesting for me was that in the middle of them, the most experienced people in Australia around weather and bushfires were predicting a long, hot, dry, windy summer. They were saying this is just the beginning. And honestly, it actually became the end way more quickly than anybody expected. And I looked at that and I thought, you know what? I think that we have reached a kind of tipping point where these global intention experiments like Lynn McTaggart runs and these global meditations that people share on Facebook and people really show up for are becoming more powerful than the news media. And that is the new way to solve problems. And the media is like screaming. It, you know, when an old paradigm is dying, it shouts very loudly, it screams. It's literally, it's like the death rattle of an old way of doing things. Sounds a bit dramatic, but I really am seeing that happening. And there's a global meditation now coming up for the coronavirus, so I'm really intrigued to see what will happen with that. But I think we've reached a really powerful point in our understanding of collective attention and collective power.
I absolutely, absolutely agree with you. Yeah, it's. I mean, when I read that blog post of yours, it reminded me of back in 1976 when England had this incredibly hot summer, very, very unusual, and the ground was cracking and hose pipe bans and all kinds of things going on. And I mean, it really was hot and dry. And one town somewhere brought in a rainmaker. And people were laughing, the media were laughing. There was this guy in all his regalia, you know, doing some kind of rain dance in one of the suburbs. And nothing happened for about a week. And then I think 2 weeks later, it started rain and it didn't stop for 2 years. So, you know, there you are. This does happen. And I think you're absolutely right about the attention and the intention. Before we talk about how we can use our attention and intention in a positive way. What I want to know, have you spoken to money about how does it feel about all this negative attention that's suddenly been, you know, does it get to the point where it's like, oh, too much, the weight of it is just too much?
I haven't actually asked money specifically that this time, but I know the answer is no. Money never, money is an energy that is constantly available, and it's always an energy it's sourced in love. You know, it's a very creative, beautiful, powerful energy. But what I do know, because I learned this from money a long time ago, is that there's a special delight, if you like, when human beings are relaxed and happy and open, and money can flow easily for them because they're in touch with it. They are willing to pay attention to it. They're willing to say, yes, I want it, I like it, I enjoy it, I like playing with money and I like the flow of money. There's a sort of special delight in the energy field when that happens. It's rather like having a happy customer, you know? We all have, all of us who are in business, we have the customers who are really, who just love everything and really appreciate it. And then you have the customers who come along and they buy something, but they're just a little bit like, ooh, sticky. There is more delight in serving a happy customer. But I will always serve a sticky customer. You know, I won't say, no, I don't want to serve you. But there's just a delight in doing it with people who really appreciate it. So when everyone closes down financially and economically, and money's not able to flow so much, there's that delight isn't in the air. And of course, that makes us feel more pressure. And I think it's really up to us to understand what money really is. And that's why we're making this series, to understand that it really is an energy. It's not about the notes and coins you see. They are the product of that energy. And it's an energy that is always available. And it is available in times like this, just as it is in times when the economy is booming. And now is the most amazing time to start to study this energy and learn how it works, because those people who do that will be the people who are not affected by the recession, but they are able to actually create some kind of contribution and some kind of reward system, however it works, that works for them. And so I think it's an incredibly powerful time for money.
I agree with you. It's so interesting. None of us, I mean, many people in the spiritual arena have been expecting something big coming down the pipeline, but nobody imagined that it would look like this. And yet we know that in order to create something new, we've really got to blow up what's there. And how else are you going to blow it up on a global scale?
And what's really fascinating for me, as I started to look at it, I think about all that news last year about the climate and about, you know, the disasters and the crisis from that perspective. And I look at what an extraordinarily perfect response this is, because how many of us must, in the last few years, have prayed to put an end to pollution or to slow down or to connect with each other more. There's been so much focus paid to the lack of connection, lack of community, lack of family connection. And it's like all of those prayers were answered in one go. Suddenly we're all slowed down. Yes. Pollution has almost stopped all over the world. We are having to pay attention to the people who are closest to us, and we're having to pay attention, if at a distance, to our neighbours. We're also creating a way more connected community through our online, through our devices. So people have said, oh, we want to use the devices for something more creative. Well, look what's happening. It's like, oh my goodness, how precise and beautiful is this response? And the other thing is that, you know, what might look like the shadow side, but I don't think it is yes, I realise that there's hardship, you know, especially financially. There are many people in a difficult situation, but we do need to reset the economy, because the economy that we had before will create more of what we had before. And it is largely our economy that is responsible for us making decisions that are destructive. So hard though it may be, the knowledge is here to ride this situation and to be able to handle it. And the economic reset that will emerge is really important for us.
And of course, we can't ignore the fact that people are losing their lives while this is happening. And it's not that we're making light of that by any means, but I think on a bigger picture scale, yes, it was inevitable. We may not have seen it quite like this, but it was inevitable that something like this had to happen.
And I just keep thinking, I'm so glad this is not a war.
Yes.
So this is a better way, hard though it is in individual circumstances. This is way better than seeing your son or daughter go off to fight a war.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting. I was talking to a young mum today, whose career is in jeopardy financially. She's just bought, a house, family are just moving into it. But she was saying, in amongst all of those things that one has to think about, she said, I have to say, I am just so much enjoying the time, the enforced time that I'm having with my children and my husband. And I'm
Amazing.
Hearing this from many, many people.
It's so nice to hear that. Sometimes you hear about the fraught parents, but
yes.
I think it's such an opportunity it will be a stretching experience for some people, but it's going to stretch us in a direction that will make us feel better in the end. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's one of those times that we all look back on and say, oh my goodness, it was a difficult time, but we gained something through that we never realized could happen.
Yeah, I mean, already I've noticed the word before and after coming up in the press, before Corona, and we're going to have a different climate after Corona. You're listening to Conversations with Money with me, Sandy Sedgbeer, and Love Money, Money Loves You author and Consciousness of Money coach, Sarah McCrum. Still to come, how and why we can emerge from this current crisis with a new economy and what that could look like. We'll be back with more after the break.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Time's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? As a long-time editor, book judge, spiritual magazine publisher and radio host, I've read thousands of books and interviewed hundreds of authors and teachers. So I know what's worth reading and what isn't. Now, with the spiritual book market growing increasingly crowded, more and more people are seeking my help in finding the authentic voices, the empowering tools, and the genuine skip the BS guidance that will make the most difference to their spiritual development. So I decided to make it easier by bringing my knowledge, experience, and considerable network of contacts together in the No BS Spiritual Book Club. There are no ads, no joining fees, no obligations, and no BS. Just an ever-growing library compiled by recognisable and respected names of the 10 best books that help them the most on their journeys. plus free book excerpts, audios, and live video interviews where you can quiz them about their spiritual journeys and their 10 best list choices. Your time and money are valuable, your spiritual journey even more so. If you're looking for genuine guidance from people who've walked this path before you, check out sedgbeer.com. Click on the No BS Spiritual Book Club tab and join the club. That's sedgbeer.com, sedgbeer.com. I'll see you there.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family, and then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle to America and all your problems are done, they don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Sarah, last month we were talking about values, and I find it fascinating that in the ensuing month we have all had our attention turned towards what is it that we really value.
Yes, times when everything changes, I think, really bring up values. Whenever we're in pain, or whenever there's a crisis, or whenever there's big change, values come into the equation. So it's very interesting, I think, for everybody to find out what's really important now.
And the other thing about attention is that people are noticing and paying attention to things that they hadn't thought about before. I mean, many people may have thought, well, you know, global warming, the crisis there, it's going to take years to undo. But in fact, some of the reports are showing us that already in just, you know, days, weeks, the ozone layer is clearing. You know, there's reports about the canals in Venice suddenly being very clear. And we're seeing very rapid change in that regard, which is very attention getting.
Yes, and worth paying attention to. One of the things I'm intrigued by is, for example, what will China do now? Because there will have been a dramatic reduction in pollution there. And in fact, Wuhan is one of the most polluted cities in the world, I believe, and probably contributed to the respiratory problems. You know, if your air is already constantly compromised and then something like this comes on, it wouldn't take much to make it much worse than it would have been otherwise. So, you know, what does a country like that do? Do they go back to polluting, now they can start manufacturing again? And what will the people do if they suddenly feel their air being poisoned again? Like, I think that this is a very interesting space for all of us. And are we just going to accept, oh, well, now we just have to go back to what it was before? Or do we have the courage as individuals and as a collective and as societies to say, no, we've seen how quickly things could change, and there must be a way of doing this better?
You know, you think about how, you know, people in the spiritual arena, and consciousness is rising at an amazing rate. We've seen that happen over the last few decades. People in the spiritual arena have traditionally, you know, focused more attention on what they would like to happen, the inequities that we see in the world, you know, wanting more inclusion, wanting a fairer world. And here we are with us being forced into that situation. And I don't think we will ever go back to how it was. I don't see how, once people, you know, are forced to pay attention to how this is helping so many people, that they can possibly conceive of going back. I read today that I think the Irish government have nationalised all the hospitals. So everybody gets the same level of care free. And now other countries are saying, you know what, I think Spain's doing it too. That's a great idea.
It's interesting. We were talking last night at dinner about the recession in 2008 and what happened then, and the response now to what's happening. And in 2008, when the markets crashed very dramatically and very quickly, there was from what I remember, I was in the UK at the time, there was no response really in terms of protecting businesses. Businesses went bankrupt all over the place. I'm seeing, for example, in Australia, they're talking about having a hibernation for business so that people stop paying commercial rents, they stop at the bank. It's like the banks and the landlords all have to cooperate with this, and everyone goes into hibernation because they are absolutely determined to prevent people from going out of business. I think that that is already a huge shift in consciousness that we're seeing, is this determination to protect individuals, at least more than we did last time, and to protect businesses, which are the backbone, after all, of the economy. And so I see that we can learn a lot again from this, and we're already developing new habits. We're developing habits that I think are the characteristics of a new economy: more generosity, more thoughtfulness about other people, more awareness of the impact of our own behavior on others who we can't see. You know, it's not only now I've got a cold, you get a cold, it's what's the impact of me, who may not have any symptoms, on that old person I've never met before? We've never thought like that before.
Yeah, the butterfly effect. We've heard about it, but it's never really been, you know, right center in front of us, in a sense. It's just been an idea, you know.
And it's like a training system.
It is. You're absolutely right. I'm interested in what you said earlier about the new economy. What would the new economy look like?
Well, I tend to work mostly in principles, like what principles work with money. What I have experienced and also been taught by money that works, the fundamental principle, is generosity, what I think of as a generosity of spirit. And I want to say something about what that means, because most people, when they think about generosity, they think about, for some reason, they think about giving to charity, as though giving to charity is the epitome of generosity. To me, generosity is a spirit. It's a kind of energy, and it's an energy that allows for flow. So when I think of generosity, I think of being generous to myself and being generous to others. I don't see generosity as being about giving to the most needy people. If I pay for something, I enable somebody else to buy food and pay rent and do things. If I give money to an organization, I enable people to pay rent, pay for food, do things. If I invest in a business, I enable people to pay rent, buy food, and do things. And it might be that, you know, a few people are buying yachts or whatever, but when they buy that yacht, they enable the yacht builders and the sail makers and the metal people to buy food and pay rent and do all the things that we do. And so to me, generosity is having that open relationship with money where you're not afraid to pay for things in the way that you choose, whether it's giving or saving or paying and buying things or investing, whatever your choice is. And you're not afraid to receive money as well, because the more you receive, the more you can circulate. And so I see that if we have an economy that's based on this principle of generosity, which is what we are naturally, like human beings are naturally generous. When we're relaxed and happy, we love to give and we love to receive. If we can build an economy based on that, and I see the early stages of training for that at the moment, we're having to think more generously, then we can let go of the scarcity model that we've been used to, which is what makes everybody afraid. And when people are afraid, they pay attention to what they're afraid of, and then they attract what they're afraid of. So if we could release some of that fear by understanding that generosity actually works, and that it is safe to make money and receive money, and that there are ways to make money doing things that are meaningful to you. You don't have to sell your soul to make money. That, to me, is a more generous economy, a more generous culture, and one that's actually more natural for human beings. It speaks to who we really are.
Organic farms in Germany, where And they didn't want the whole country with their produce. They just wanted to serve their local community. Chris, have I lost you? Oh, well, I was actually losing contact throughout. I could, you know, it was going completely blank, but I didn't know if it was Sarah's end or my end.
I wasn't hearing, I didn't hear most of what you said.
Okay, all right, I'll start again.
But it's good now.
Good. I heard from a German man some years ago about a new trend that was happening in Germany where organic farmers were just basically looking at serving their local community. They weren't interested in sending their produce out all over Germany and making tons of money. They just wanted to be able to earn enough to do what they love doing and serving their little community. And I think, you know, what I'm seeing now with this return to enforced return to community is that that may be a trend in the future whereby we don't need to earn quite so much, but we're happy having enough and also seeing that our community has enough.
What I would like to see, I think there's this phrase that goes through my mind all the time at the moment, which is our commonwealth. And I keep playing with this idea that a wealthy country has wealthy citizens. It is not a wealthy country that has a lot of poverty in it. What I learned from my conversations with money is that there is a principle about expansion, that we do naturally expand. So yes, I think there'll be a kind of reset around values. To me, what you're talking about, Sandy, is more about values, about them aligning with what they value and growing from there. I personally see that growth is natural and inevitable. You know, we always want to grow as human beings. It doesn't always have to be growth in income, but it might be growth in our impact. And how we distribute the income will be a choice that we can make. So the growth could look very different from what it's looked like in the past. When you're afraid of not having enough money, or you're afraid of having money but you make it, you develop all kinds of weird habits around it. You know, people become very possessive and afraid of losing it and insecure. Whereas if you feel more secure, you could make the money that feels right to you. You could make different decisions about how you pay people. You could make different decisions about where you do your shopping. And for me, that I think is where the opportunity comes, is where we start to make wiser, maturer decisions about how we operate around money and then grow from there rather than just grow for the sake of growing. That would make a very interesting economy.
So you're not foreseeing that people will say, I will be content to earn less because, you know, those that had less than me before can have a bit more if I have a bit less. You're looking at...
No, because it doesn't work like that.
More. No.
Yes, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work like that. We think that if I have more, somebody else has less. That's not true, actually. If you think about it, if I decide to create a business so that I'm going to make more money, I will then start to employ people who perhaps mightn't have had a job otherwise. So they start to make more money. They start to buy more in the economy. So other people start to make more money. We all, in theory, we all go up together. Unfortunately, when you have a scarcity mindset that goes with that, you get people being afraid to make money or uncomfortable about making money, and then you get people very hooked on making money. So the split, the range, doesn't come because that's how money is. It doesn't come out because if they make more, these people have less. It comes because we've not made wise, conscious, mature decisions about what we do with our money, and we've made decisions that are destructive to other people or destructive to the environment. And you can't go forever with that. You know, you can't go forever making destructive decisions.
You know, we've all seen pictures in the newspaper of, you know, the shop's shelves being empty, the stockpiling that's gone on, you know, the sudden disappearance of all the toilet paper in the land and all the pasta, etc. And I read an article, you know, by a psychologist trying to explain what this behaviour is about. And she said that it is an attempt to maintain control when we're in situations where we feel we don't have any, and that by going and buying all the toilet paper gives us a sense of security. So how do you think that, you know, in a new world order in terms of money, etc., that we will get out of those conditioned mindsets of control and security? Yeah, and become more relaxed. How's that going to work?
I mean, this really is about consciousness. It's about all of us expanding our consciousness. That maybe sounds a bit grand in a way, because it's so easy to say words like that. But I am seeing, you know, we are seeing governments making decisions that I think would have been pretty unimaginable even a few months ago in terms of trying to protect people. We're seeing more discussions now about things like universal basic income, and the research shows that when there's a universal basic income, people actually relax, become more creative, and contribute more. So it's really what I think of when we expand consciousness. What I mean by that is we make wiser decisions, which change our reality. The decisions we make affect what we actually experience. So if we started making better decisions, then we will have a different experience. If we make decisions both individually and as a society that create a better distribution of wealth, we can help people to feel less insecure about money, and then that kind of consciousness gradually fades from our experience. It's there because we still have cellular memories. I often meet Americans who have grown up with their grandparents' fear around the recession in the 30s, the Great Depression, and the impact that it had on them. So as the new energy comes in, if we come back to the principles of energy, as the new energy comes in and establishes itself and is it's kinder and more generous, which it is, and we have a better experience with money, we can actually let go of those old memories. And as we let go of them, we don't revisit them. And then the people I know who've done more work on themselves are not panic buying. And they're not feeling insecure, and they find the things they need. They realize that they're going to eat the same amount now as they were eating before. We're going to be eating in the future. We don't need any extra food. And so they've already experienced that change. The more people who experience it, the more people who relax, who discover that we can survive this situation, the more that consciousness spreads. So it's literally, it's up to people who are aware and think about consciousness and have done some work on it to really put into practice what you've learnt now. And this is the time for all those light workers, consciousness workers, spiritual workers, all the people who care about that stuff. This is our time to step up and say, hold on a moment. There is a better way of doing this, and I am going to be the first example in my life.
Well, I hope that people do. I mean, right now, there's, you know, before this occurred, attention span was very short. There was so much competition for our attention. You know, and news is constantly going across our phones, little headlines in front of our eyes. You know, it was just crazy making. Now people have a chance to stop for a bit. But of course, we've still got a ubiquity of technology and things. You know, there's so many free things that people are offering. It's all competing for our attention again. So what advice can you offer people to help us get into a new routine, if you like, you know, to develop a practice of attention and intention and using them wisely as a kind of daily practice?
I think if we go back to where we started this conversation, we were talking about the fact that what you pay attention to, let's express it like this, what you pay attention to grows. If you pay attention to scary things, they grow. If you pay attention to goodness, it grows, whatever form of goodness that is. I personally find that awareness of things is really important. So just being aware of that, and then first of all, perhaps for a week or two, just observing, where am I paying attention? And is that where I want to pay attention? Observe it and don't do too much about it yet. Don't rush into action, but even write down, so today I paid attention to all of these things. You could put a percentage on it or put a number on it to show how much attention you paid. And then have a look at all those things you paid attention to and figure out, okay, which ones were valuable, which ones were an investment of your time and energy, and which ones do you feel were a waste? And which ones some will just be necessary. And then ask yourself, how could I increase the amount of valuable attention I pay? And how can I decrease the attention that I'm wasting? And from that simple thing of starting to grow valuable attention, decrease wasted attention, and do the necessary attention, just do the necessary. Do the minimum, whatever is needed that's necessary, you will literally find not only that your emotional state changes, because when you pay attention to something that's valuable, you feel good, but you'll actually find that your reality starts to change. And what that looks like is your health gets better, literally, yes. Your relationships get better because you start to pay attention to love rather than fighting and arguing and, you know, being difficult and stroppy. So your relationships get better. Your business money situation gets better because you start paying attention to receiving money rather than losing it, being scared of not having enough, being scared of being broke or whatever. You pay attention to different things, and it really is true, what you pay attention to grows, and it grows physically, tangibly, it grows in the world. And so if you did that then for 3 months, I can promise you, because I have so many years of experience with this, you will be experiencing a different reality then. You'll have different results from the people who are paying attention to all those things that are wasting their time and energy.
Thank you for that. You, like many people at the moment, and I love watching the outpouring of, you know, everybody's giving free stuff away to amuse the kids, to keep people, you know, just to help everybody through this. I think that's wonderful. And I know that you are too. You, in your last blog post, put out so many resources that you're offering. One in particular, which got my attention, is From Worry to Love, How to Create More Goodness in the World by Paying More Attention to Love. So tell us a little bit about that and what else you're offering people.
That was a webinar that I ran, and all the recordings of it are now available. So it's kind of like permanently available, because I realized that a lot of people were trapped in worrying, and many spiritual people will talk the language of love, but the reality is that they're actually really worried. And I know how important it is to make that shift, because love and paying attention to love is good healing, first of all. So given that we're in a health crisis, I think healing is a useful thing to pay attention to. And I know that it works for money and all the other things as well. And so I felt it was really important to do that. And I worked with a friend of mine called David Rauter, and we taught a series of activations, basically, to help people to make that shift from worry into love. And the point about that is that you might need to do that every single day. You might need to do it every single time you read the news at the moment, that you get a little bit infected by that energy of fear, and then you shift that into love. So David taught some grounding exercises, which are exercises I do every day. I did an activation, it's, I don't know, maybe 15 minutes long, where I literally take you into the direct experience of love. And that can last for days in people. And there are a few other things in there. So there's a whole set of resources that you can then go back to time and time again to tune into the love, the frequency that heals and resolves situations in beautiful ways, which I believe is what we need here.
Mm, absolutely. And are these free?
Yes. I'm producing free stuff at the moment, which is really like my crisis response situation. For my regular services, I have not discounted my prices because I don't believe in that. That just discounts the economy. But I provide free stuff to help people handle the situation, because that seems to me the most important thing. And I'm just sharing that because I think there's always this question that people have around money. Should I discount? Should I give everything for free? The decision I made is I would do the crisis response, the help, for free. I would create an event every week, is in fact what I'm doing, where people can show up and they can learn something that they can take away and practice and feel better. But at a business level, my business continues anyway. It's really relevant to the situation, so I continue to do business in the normal way. But that was my decision.
Sarah, how easy are these to find on your website?
The very simple way to find them is to go to courses.sarahmacrum.com, and they're extremely easy to find there.
Fantastic. And what else have you got? I know you've got some a Facebook group and some energy activations as well.
I have a collection of energy activations, which are 30-minute relaxing recordings on all different topics. There's about 1,000 of them in a Facebook group called Energy Activations. I recorded them live every day for 2 or 3 years, and they're all in there. On courses.sarahmacrum.com, you'll see there's something called Be the Solution, and that's going to be a weekly online event where I'm going to teach these activations, teach something new every week that will help people as long as the corona situation is continuing. I'd like to really call it a corona course or something. I think the word corona is so beautiful, but I couldn't quite do that. That's called Be the Solution, and that's new stuff. But you can explore. There are various things there which speak to different people's interests in this situation.
Sarah, we're almost out of time now, so I just want to say, I love the fact, the way that you so beautifully separate, the things you give away for free, generosity, everything that you've talked about, you are practicing, and you have very clear guidelines, which we can all learn from, about, the things that are part of our living.
Yes, because we need to keep making a living, all of us, because that's the economy. That's the circulation of money.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, that's almost it for part three of Conversations with Money, but not quite. The question we've asked a couple of times is, if you could ask money a question, what would it be? If you haven't done that yet, don't be shy. Put your attention on money in a different way. Talk to it. See what it has to say. And share it with us. Send us your money stories and your questions and answers to sandy.sandysedgbyshow@gmail.com. And you can go to Sarah's courses.sarahmacrum.com. You will find a wealth of material to keep you busy for months and months and months. That's it from me, Sandy Sedgbeer.
And from me, Sarah Macrum.
And I'll be back next week with another edition of What Is Going On. Until then, goodbye, be safe, be well, stay sane.